Welcome back in part two of
A Band on the Run, The Battle of Chosen.
We will explore three more questions. These include:
one, what are several turning points of the Korean War prior to Chosen? Two, what happened at the Battle of Chosen? And three, what was the impact of Chosen in the Korean War?
Yeah, on September 16th of 1950, less than 3 months after the start of the war, Operation Chromite was executed. This is the landing of Incheon. The 1st Marines led the way under the command of General O.P. Smith, nicknamed
The Professor.
Gotta like that.
Mm-hmm.
The success of Incheon can be compared to George Washington's crossing of the Delaware in late 1776. After the successful landing at Incheon, President Zingrie told MacArthur,
"We love you as the savior of our race."
Mac even got a new nickname,
"The Sorcerer of Incheon."
And President Truman was reported to have said about Incheon,
"I have witnessed a miracle."
The consequences of Incheon had a dark side as well. The landing hypnotized most of the General MacArthur's team, and more importantly, those in Washington, D.C. Instead of reclaiming what had been lost up to the 38th parallel, as originally planned, the general decided it was time to unify Korea under Rhee's leadership. This was inconceivable before Incheon.
So Matt goes from lack of confidence to arrogance, like Kim, right?
Let me give you more background on Mac, and you can make the decision, you know, on your own. But yes, I think you're really on to something here. Okay. MacArthur seemed to be born for the military. His dad had fought in the Civil War, and his son was involved in both world wars. Given this, it isn't surprising that MacArthur was more than a little narcissistic. He demonstrated this condition when he referred to the Chinese soldiers as
laundrymen.
Or even worse, gooks, a term that would be also used in another war.
Vietnam.
Correct again. Given this lengthy service in Asia during World War II, MacArthur believed he understood,
quote, the mind of the Oriental, unquote.
Yeah, the general also underestimated his boss, President Truman. He labeled Truman as that Jew in the White House.
Oh, I didn't know he was Jewish.
He isn't. It is just an example of MacArthur being MacArthur. Remember, arrogance is a reason for much of what took place during the Korean War, both good and bad here. After Incheon, UN forces, largely led by the United States, retook the city of Seoul. MacArthur came to Seoul to give Rhee keys to the city. He rode in a Chevy sedan with the license plate 5 stars.
No way.
Way. Mac left the country before nightfall. In fact, he never stayed overnight in Korea. He preferred his headquarters in Tokyo. On October 19th, UN forces captured Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea. Just 4 days before, President Truman met with General MacArthur at Wake Island to discuss his concerns about the possibility of the war widening. Most concerning to the president was the Chinese involvement. MacArthur dismissed the president's concerns and claimed that
there was very little
chance of the Chinese getting involved. We'll see if that comes true or not. From Pyongyang, the American 8th Army moved to the west of the Taibek Mountains, which means dragon back, while the Marine 1st Division moved east of this mountain range. Ned Alman, nicknamed
Ned the Dread,
oversaw MacArthur's plan to push UN forces to the Yalu River, the border of Korea and China. MacArthur's confidence soared as the Marines deployed at Chosin Reservoir, which provided hydroelectricity to Manchuria. He ignored critical signs that the Chinese had already entered the war. As UN forces moved north of Pyongyang, Chinese forces attacked them. Some Chinese were captured, but General Alman labeled them as volunteers. In fact, Chinese prisoners communicated there were at least 2 Chinese divisions, approximately 40,000 were already in Korea. This news reached President Truman on November 1st, the same day that two Puerto Ricans tried to assassinate him.
Really? Oh, that sounds like another great topic for a podcast.
Excellent suggestion. So as General Smith settled in around Chosin, he believed he was walking into a trap. As historian Hampton Sides argues, Smith faced four foes.
One, the mountains, which made traveling challenging at best. There was only one road, really ox cart trail in and out. Two, the weather. Some that lived through the battle claimed it was as cold as 70 below with a wind chill. Three, the Chinese, who had 10 times as many men as he did. And four, his superiors, who failed to see the signs he did. Most important, Almond and Mac.
Interestingly enough, Sides, who uses the famous Chinese general Sun Tzu to suggest that General Smith faced the ninth situation of warfare called desperate ground, which Sun defines as saved by fighting without delay. Tzu's book, The Art of War, which was written some 2,500 years ago, is literally the textbook for war.
Wow, that's amazing.
On November 25th, as the Chinese were getting ready to spring their trap on the Americans at Chosin, they were celebrating Thanksgiving, courtesy of General MacArthur, who airdropped in turkeys, mashed potatoes, and even pumpkin pie. The general even told the soldiers his bold prediction, which he claimed
they would be home by Christmas.
Yeah. General Smith, who had deployed his men around Chosin, was not nearly as confident. At this point, General Smith had 15,000 men spread over four locations. These locations included
8,000 at Udemne, who were the spear of the 1st Marines, 400 more just 5 miles north of Hagaru, protecting the Tokkong Pass, 3,600 were at Hagaru, including General Smith, and 2,500 army troops were northeast of Hagaru, protecting Smith's flank. This was known as the East Hill.
One of the actions General Smith took was to build an airstrip and supply dump at Hagaru. His boss, General Almond, was perplexed by Smith's lack of advancement. Almond said years after the war, Smith
always had excuses for not performing at the required time the task he was requested to do.
If only Almond heard what one Chinese general said to his troops.
I want you to kill the Marines as you would snakes in your home.
Maybe he would have appreciated Smith's caution.
Sounds like he was too arrogant even for that.
You're probably right. 2 days after Thanksgiving dinner, the Chinese launched their trap, attacking three of the four locations around Chosin. As Smith worked his engineers around the clock to complete the airstrip, General Almond demanded he continue his advancements. The next day, November 28th, the Chinese attacked Hagaru, which was largely defended by cooks, bakers, and engineers. Smith understood the advancement was over. With the Chinese surrounding his forces on three sides, he requested help from Navy pilots and forces stationed at Kotori, 11 miles away. Unfortunately, Navy pilots were limited in their usefulness due to the weather. When the clouds cleared, pilots used a new weapon on the enemy, napalm. Still, the Chinese came in three waves. The first wave was fully equipped with weapons. The second wave had few weapons, which means they were to pick up the weapons from those who died or fought hand-to-hand combat. The last wave killed any Chinese soldiers who turned back.
Pretty strong incentive to fight.
Indeed. As for the UN reinforcements, while the garrison at Kotori almost turned around because of the number of casualties they incurred, only 50% made it to Hagaru. Those at the East Hill had it far worse. It took them 5 days to link up with forces at Hagaru. They did so by crossing the frozen reservoir. When some of the men took off their boots, they noticed their feet were black. Some found that their toe is still in the boots. The one benefit of fighting in Chosen was that they never bled out. Their blood froze before they could do so. An unusual request that some of the American soldiers made were Tootsie Rolls. It was said that they were used to plug up bullet holes.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. The 8,000 Marines at Yamdemni, or what was left of them, also began the journey back to Hagari. On their way south, they linked up with the Fox Company, who had fought for 5 days and nights at the Tolgon Pass against a Chinese force that outmanned them at least 10 to 1. Back at Hagari, General Smith completed an airstrip that allowed C-47s to land. More importantly, the C-47s evacuated approximately 4,000 wounded soldiers. Once his forces from Yamdemni and the East Hill made it back to Hagari, Smith, with about 10,000 UN forces, began the retreat to the Sea of Japan. By this time, there was no question from either Mack or Truman that unification of Korea was no longer possible. Before leaving Hagari, a reporter made the comment that it was hard to believe that the Marines would be retreating. General Smith gave one of the best answers any officer could when he declared,
"Retreat, Hal. We're just attacking in a different direction."
Remember what Sun Tzu said?
Yes, desperate ground, rule number 9.
Exactly. Before abandoning Hagari, Smith's forces faced one more gruesome task, burying the dead. They did so by digging a shallow pit. Those buried there were frozen as they had died. As they moved south, the Chinese had one more obstacle for the UN forces. The Chinese destroyed a 24-foot section of the road out of Hagari, known as the Fengshilan Pass.
You said there was only one road in, right?
Correct. To fix this section, the Navy used a C-191 boxcar plane to drop treadways, a makeshift road, which the engineers locked into place. As one observer said,
"A bridge delivered by parachutes, assembled by acrobats, and buttressed in part by the enemy's frozen dead."
Amazingly enough, this daring plan worked, and both men and equipment made it over to continue their journey south.
Oh, that's just terrible. Have American soldiers ever had it worse?
Well, a Time reporter might have summarized it best when he wrote,
"Was a battle unparalleled in U.S. military history."
Astonishingly, General Ullman correctly claimed,
"No more gallant men ever fought the battles of our country in any of its wars."
Agree. Technically, the Korean War hasn't really ended.
Oh, what?
Yeah, the armistice on July 27, 1953, put the war basically on pause. So let's end the podcast with 6 consequences of the Korean War. Some 5 million Koreans were displaced because of the war. 2, General MacArthur was fired by President Truman. 3, the NSC, or the National Security Council, 68, recommended vast increases in military spending, which launched an arms race between the United States and the Soviet Union. 4, more than 33,000 Americans died in the war. The Chinese may have lost as many as 180,000, while the Koreans suffered as many as 2.5 million dead. 2 long-term consequences must also be addressed, which is number 5. The economic status of both countries demonstrates just how different they are today. South Korea embraces capitalism and now has the 13th largest economy in the world. The country ranks 5th in total exports and 10th in total imports.
That makes sense. They make like Samsung products, Hyundai cars, right?
They sure do. The North Korean economy ranks 89th. Unlike leadership that has changed in South Korea, Syngman died in 1960. Kim lived until 1994. Kim continues to be a godlike figure. There are over 500 statues of him in North Korea. You can even view his body. His grandson, Kim Jong-un, currently rules North Korea. Number six.
That this conflict has been largely forgotten today is another consequence of the war.
Sadly, you are correct. To those who have served in Korea in the past and in the future, I think President Lincoln's words ring true. But in a larger sense, Lincoln said, we cannot dedicate it, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men and women, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it, far above our poor powers to add or detract. This world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. I hope our listeners have enjoyed this podcast as much as I did researching this topic. I want to thank some really awesome historians, T.R. Fehrenbach, David Halberstam, and especially Hampton Sides, whose excellent book focuses on the Battle of Chosin. Also want to thank Professors Patricia Ebray and Anne Walthall, whose textbook provided much of the historical context for the podcast. Lastly, PBS for producing a film about Chosin, which is really outstanding. Thanks as well to my partner in podcasting, Melissa Basinger.
Mm-hmm.
Until our next podcast, which I'm actually working on two of them, as one of my favorite historical figures said.
When people see things they are and say why, I do the things that never were and say why not.